Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time award-winning Politically Direct, and I am, of course, the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here the 14th of January, the year 2021. It's our first broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, of the new year. And I just want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you might be doing so throughout the Garden State, and of course, throughout the good old US of A. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, I'd love to hear from you. You can write to the show, and the inbox is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I'd love to hear from you, what you liked about the show. What were your favorite episodes in 2020? Who you like to hear coming up in 2021? And certainly, again, I do answer my emails promptly. So please write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow yours truly on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. And certainly check out the show's Instagram at politicallydirectnj. Plenty of new stories and likes and followers, so I do appreciate the support, every day on Instagram. Also, hit me up on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. 1,000-plus likes and counting, ladies and gentlemen, on the Facebook page. So I must be doing something right, because despite even having a 7-day Facebook jail sentence recently, I'm still going strong, and especially here with Insider NJ. And of course, you could check out all of our episodes anywhere, anytime by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. Love to hear what you have to say about it. Certainly check out all the episodes there. We got great guests coming up here in 2021. So you definitely don't want to miss out there. Of course, recent episodes are all there again, www.insidernj.com/podcast. And of course, you check out Insider NJ folks by going to their website, www.insidernj.com, for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the city of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. And of course, starts at the very top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, certainly a great writer, I don't like a lot of his views, but he's an excellent writer nonetheless. Also check out Jay Lasser, another guy who I don't particularly like concerning his views, but he's an excellent writer, so you definitely want to check out his columns. And whenever you want to check out either one's social media, if you can tolerate it and endure it, you know, without getting sick to your stomach or aggravated, I wish you the best of luck, because I don't know many people that can. But again, great teammates of mine here on Insider NJ, and certainly other outstanding columnists that work with Insider NJ. Certainly, I do want to thank Insider NJ, my boss, Pete Onelia, as we started doing a cross-promotional project now with Insider NJ. Certainly, for those of you that watch me on Monday nights via Real Talk with Fernandy Uribe at Insider, you know, at Eisen NJ. Of course, you can check out the show at www.eisennj.org/realtalk. Again, www.eisennj.org/real-talk. Just very grateful for Insider NJ for doing a cross-promotional project here with us, and certainly sharing the episodes there with Eisen NJ, who I would call the leader in independent media here in the Garden State when it comes to outstanding video content and outstanding independent journalism. So I'm proud to partner with them on Monday nights, and I'm proud to partner here with Insider NJ for Politically Direct. So it's great to see both entities working together, and so I can't say enough about how grateful I am again to the Graham family and to Pete Onelia, the general manager, for again continuing to believe in this podcast every week, but also to cross promotion with Eisen and Jay and carry Real Talk with Fernandy Uribe and Share the Link, of course. So certainly, check out the great journalism at Eisen and Jay. And also, of course, once you click on Insider NJ's main site, once again, www.insidernj.com, upper right-hand corner, you will see the subscribe button. Do me a favor, click on it, and automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. That's right, all the great columns, all the scoops, everything going on in New Jersey politics will be out there, right in your inbox first thing in the morning. So when you're having breakfast, maybe you're watching the sports debate shows in the morning, like I like to do. I love watching Fox Sports. I love watching – I'm not so much of a fan of First Things First. I think it's kind of boring. But I certainly enjoy watching Undisputed with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharpe, and, of course, then The Herd at noon. But as I'm doing that, and since I'm home on semester break, I will be going through my inbox, right, like all of you. And guess what? When you're doing that, you'll see the morning intelligence briefing right there waiting for you. So check it out. And don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook, and also follow Insider NJ on Twitter as well, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Well, folks, again, Happy New Year. It's our first broadcast of 2021. Certainly, I know I speak for a lot of you listening. You're happy to put 2020 behind you, hopefully starting off 2021 on a better note. Hopefully all of you are healthy, as well as your families. What can you say about the political climate to start 2021? It's been quite tumultuous. It's only a few days in, right? It's a couple of weeks already in. But we're hanging in there. You just got to stay strong and stay positive and just, follow the news and be involved or share responsible content when possible. Certainly, it's a little more difficult these days with big tech companies like Facebook being as oppressive as they are with some of their standards. I think we've all seen the scrutiny that Mark Zuckerberg has come under, as well as Jack Dorsey with Twitter and what they've been doing. It's come under a lot of debate about what, these big tech companies can do and what they should be doing. Depends maybe what side of the political aisle you sit on. There might not be a lot that the left and the right agree on in this country, folks, but I think it's probably a safe bet to say that big tech companies need to sort of be reined in. And we heard that a lot last year, right, during the election. We even heard it during the Democratic primary process, right? We heard big tech companies are growing too powerful. We saw Mark Zuckerberg go before Capitol Hill in 2019, scumbag that he is, and certainly sit there and talk to senators and U.S. representatives with that smug look that he has in his face and attempt to defend what Facebook does and certainly as an entity. And folks, listen, there's no question that they're private companies. I get that. I understand that people will automatically sort of fall back in the mechanism of, well, you know, they're a private company. They can do what they want. And if you don't want to comply or cooperate with their guidelines and their user agreements, then guess what? You'll get kicked off the service. And that's their right to do that. And I get that. But I think what we forget about these big tech companies is while they are private companies, they're also publicly traded companies. So the best way to hurt Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, you know, respectively, is to, if you're interested, is, you know, sell off your stock or to unsubscribe. And I think you saw that. And I was so happy to see this week. And I know it's just, you know, a drop in the bucket for them. It doesn't really do any considerable harm to their pockets. But it was nice to see Facebook and Twitter lose subscribers and lose some millions of dollars. I'd love to see Facebook and Twitter lose billions of dollars. Believe me, there are no more deserving scumbags in the world than Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey for their policies. And, you know, they can selectively ban certain people. But, President Maduro of Venezuela and the Ayatollah of Iran still somehow have their Twitter accounts and their Facebook accounts, while other people cannot, you know. So if that's not the peak of hypocrisy, I don't know what is. But, you know, again, not trying to draw moral equivalence here, but just trying to highlight the hypocrisy that exists with how this is being covered. But, again, we'll see. We're good. You know, we're happy to be, you know, still going strong on Facebook here with the program and the podcast. Hopefully I don't get another 7-day suspension because God knows what Facebook will get me on next time. So I'll have to definitely wait and see. Folks, again, Politically Direct in 2021 will continue bringing the exclusives that nobody else brings you. And, of course, let's start off the new year and the first broadcast of 2021 with one of my favorites. He's a fellow Insider NJ teammate. He's an outstanding journalist in his own right. He's the great Fred Snowflake joining me today here on Block Talk Radio. Freddie, what's going on, brother?
Hey, how's it going? Nice, good. Nice to have me.
Good. Listen,
so
Happy New Year.
Did I throw you off Facebook, huh?
Yeah, I was suspended for 7 days 2 weeks ago. So, you know, it was uncomfortable, Fred, and I certainly have my issues with big tech companies, and we'll talk about that later. So certainly as fellow journalists, you know, as fellow journalists, I think there's a lesson to be learned here about how we, you know, as journalists, you know, use online mechanisms to convey our stories and convey our content. Mm-hmm. But Fred, how's 2021 treating you so far?
Well, only 14 days in, I guess it's treating me fairly well. I do know I'm very lucky. I have my job, I'm able to write things, and they send me a check. So I guess I can't really complain.
Absolutely. Well, Fred, let's get right to it. Certainly, we're talking about less than 7 days to go until a new presidency will be ushered in. Joe Biden will indeed become the 46th president. Next Wednesday on January 20th, he will be inaugurated. Now, how that inauguration takes place, I don't know. In terms of the sort of the usual pomp and circumstance, I had the privilege of going 4 years ago to that inauguration. It was really fun. You know, I enjoyed it. But obviously, due to COVID-19 and, of course, other measures, it seems that next week's inauguration will look very, very different. Are you surprised at all about the fact that we're not going to be seeing sort of the usual ceremony? You know, is it disappointing to you?
It is not disappointing personally. I guess you really can't be surprised, obviously, for two reasons. One is the overriding reason is the pandemic. And, you know, we're not seeing anything. We're not seeing baseball games. We're not being able to go to football games. I know that's a little trite when you compare it to the inauguration of a president, but I think most people would get the point. So I guess it's probably not surprising that this would be a scaled down ceremony. And then, of course, you have the unrest that we saw last week, which is also a contributing factor. So I guess in a way, yeah, it's disappointing, but it's not surprising.
Now, Fred, you extensively at the end of last year did a great job in detailing in your columns sort of, you know, the political pulse that exists in New Jersey. And I think how many New Jerseyans were looking at how the process was unfolding after Election Day, certainly leading up to the Senate races, the runoffs right on January 3rd. I think we saw what the results were. Listen, I think there's still a segment of the population that's hard to convince, Fred, that not only what happened with Georgia, but what happened in November 3rd still leaves, you know, some skepticism to people, whether it's about, you know, primarily vote by mail, right? I think here in New Jersey, for example, I think it's fair to say there's still, you know, not a good amount of New Jerseyans, obviously not the majority, but a certain segment of the population that still is skeptical about vote by mail. I think we've all learned about how it can be ripe for fraud. You know, up here in Hudson County where I live, you know, we saw vote by mail fraud in Hoboken recently. Now, again, not on the large scale that's being alleged, you know, obviously in state and national politics, but people still remain skeptical though, Fred, because at the end of the day, you know, Governor Murphy, you know, it's okay for us to go and shop for food and go to motor vehicle. Well, not right now, at least in Hudson County, motor vehicles closed. But for a lot of New Jerseyans, it's like, well, if you're healthy enough to go food shopping or go dine, you know, you should be able to go vote in person. And I think a lot of New Jerseyans are still left with a bad taste in their mouth. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, let me make a few points. I mean, responding to what you say. Number one, I agree that because of what you say, being able to dine and what have you and go to ShopRite, we probably could have had, for lack of a better term, traditional in-person voting on November 3rd. I agree. But number two, I don't know if you got to look at the other fact. I mean, you mentioned Hoboken, and there was also a problem in Patterson, too, back in the May election. But, I mean, these cases of fraud did not go undetected. They were detected, right? So, I mean, it's not as if anyone got away with anything. And I think as a larger issue, we know that more people voted than ever before. And I would argue that more people voting is a good thing, not necessarily a bad thing. And I think overall, I don't think it was a bad experience. I think it was a fairly good experience. I mean, look, I mean, if I had my druthers, I mean, I like that word, druthers, don't you? But anyway, if I could do what I really wanted to do, I like going to the polls on Election Day. I think it's fun. Granted, it's part of what I do as a journalist because I always used to go and try to talk to people. So I like that. But I admit it's quote-unquote easier to vote from home, to just check boxes and mail it in or drop it off. So, I mean, it really goes both ways. I think that what you say is true, but I think going forward, I would hope that, look, I think the vote-by-mail option is going to be there. You know, the vote-by-mail option was there before the pandemic hit. But I'm just sure. I do hope that going forward, there's more. We also, like next year, beginning in June, beginning with the primary, that I hope we're able to have in-person voting again.
I agree with you. I'd like to see in-person voting again. I'm hoping that if we can somehow manage and marginalize the pandemic here in New Jersey, that Governor Murphy would loosen some of the restrictions when it comes to voting. And the reason the reason I brought up the Hoboken example by me is because it's a local issue. But also what was disappointing was that, of course, it was on a low scale. But even then, and I'm sure you read up on the case, you know, even when the appropriate parties were arrested and forced to face justice, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office and federal judges weren't exactly punishing people. So part of the reason I was pissed off is, well, you're not really setting an example. Like, you need to scare people. It's like, hey, if you're going to commit voter fraud, then the punishment should be severe, and it wasn't. And I think that's what disappoints a lot of us when we see this. It's like, okay, it happens, fine, it's unfortunate, but if we catch the people that are responsible, then the judicial system needs to be punitive, and it just seems like it never is with this. And I think
I agree with what you're saying. Obviously, it should be penalty should be rather harsh.
Absolutely. And again, and for me, you know, I take voting seriously more so because of my mother. My mom lost the right to vote because, you know, leaving Cuba, obviously, free elections are no longer possible there. So, you know, I cherish the right to vote because I look at how sacredly my mom looks at it, and my aunt mm-hmm. and my grandmother before she passed last year. I mean, they took the right to vote seriously. And that's why I do, too. So that's why I'm always, you know, to me, it's a very personal issue when I see that there's a potential for fraud. And, you know, we hear about the cases, right, in different counties where ballots were being mailed out to different addresses, or, you know, multiple ballots are being mailed out. Now, does that mean that it's compiled into an utter and complete fraud? I can't say that for certain, but we know the cases exist. But to the point of, is it that much of a problem? I think it's fair to say that probably in New Jersey, it hasn't been proven yet. Am I right with that?
No, I think you are right. I mean, keep in mind, just, you know, if people are moving around, if somebody mails a ballot to someone at a different address or to someone who's dead, that doesn't automatically mean that ballot's going to be returned. So you got to keep that in mind, too. So I don't think I agree with you that there's no proof that it's a major, major problem.
No, understood. And, of course, as we move, obviously we're here now in 2021. We know that it's an election year. Here in the Garden State, Fred, and I have to tell you, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here when I say this, but
What's wrong with being a smartass?
No, I agree. Listen, I'm known for it. I'm famous for it. It's probably what got me suspended on Facebook to begin with. But, Fred, I'm a little skeptical when I see that the governor's approval rating, again, nothing against Governor Murphy. I've met him a few times. He's a gentleman with me. He's a nice guy. He's a guy that I think I'd want to go sit down and have a beer with and watch a ball game with, and, you know, chit-chat with him. I just find it really crazy, Fred, that, you know, we're talking about 70% approval rating for a guy that I think a lot of New Jerseyans, you know, last year in March and April at the height of the pandemic, I get it. I think a lot of people said, hey, listen, the governor in a densely populated state is taking the measure he needs to take. But, Fred, I think a lot of people have just become fed up with the governor's executive orders. So when I see a 70% approval rating, the first question I have is, who the hell are they polling? Because I can tell you right now, it's not business owners. It's not a lot of people that work, I think, in different industries. So I'm kind of puzzled, Fred.
Well, I haven't seen it at 70. I've seen it in the low 60s, which is still good. So I understand the point you are making. I think if you go back last March, a lot of people didn't even know who he was. So that's keep that in mind, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I know that this is a political divide. We've seen this even on the national level. I think, generally speaking, if you balance off public health and public safety on one hand and economic vitality on the other hand, everyone says you need a balance between the two. But think about it. It's tough to have a 100% balance 100% of the time. So you have to lean one way or the other. I think Democrats would lean in the direction of public safety and public health, considering that more important, while Republicans might lean in favor of economic vitality. So I think that's the political split. And, you know, voter registration, there are a million more registered Democrats in New Jersey in the registration rolls than there are Republicans. And I think that, on a very basic level, could explain the approval ratings that you're talking about. I mean, that's what I really think it is. And I mean, people, it depends what you look. I went to a rally, one of the rallies I went to over the summer was in Randolph, New Jersey, in Monmouth County. And it was there was a rally in support of a woman who was complaining about, she runs an indoor tennis
center. Yeah,
and
that's right.
That was close. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's open again. But that was close. That was the rally. And then again, you know, it may sound insensitive to the business owner, but some people could say, well, wait a minute. Public health and public safety is more important than somebody's tennis. I know that could be unfair because it's not just playing tennis. It's your livelihood. But I think that's kind of how maybe some people may think of it, as unfair, as insensitive as that may be, that it's not really an essential business, and it may come down on the side of public safety. And I think that may explain the governor's approval ratings. But, you know, I actually am just writing a column that this is kind of a fluid situation. His approval ratings could always go in the other direction very soon. Like, for instance...
I agree with that, Fred.
Suppose it's perceived that he's basically, if the state botches the vaccine rollout, I mean, that could be a problem. I mean, a problem in real life, but also a political problem as well.
Well, you know what, Fred, what's interesting, and I brought this up on my other show, Real Talk, on Monday night that I do live with Eisen and Jay, and it shouldn't be a political discussion, but it tends to be one that I think sometimes gets convoluted because, for example, I was in Florida. I was in South Florida mid-December. And let me tell you, man, it was like night and day over there. And it was amazing, too, because, you know, people are still wearing masks. I get all that. People are being cautious. People are being, you know, judicious. But it was interesting because, and again, maybe the dynamics is, you know, it's a little warmer, which wasn't always the case at night, but it's a little warmer, clearly. It's more spacious. It's not as densely populated as New Jersey. But Fred, you know, we had indoor dining in Florida at 50%. We had other capacity in other venues and other, you know, other businesses at 50%. And again, we're seeing cases in Florida not as high as New Jersey's still, even with the measures being as strict as they are here. And also, at the same time, like, I mean, and we'll get to other measures too. I mean, like a gallon of gas is cheaper in Florida. I mean, up here, the governor and the legislature decide to add a new gas tax last year in the middle of a pandemic. And we'll talk about that later. But it just seems like it shouldn't have to be political, but it just seems like whether it's Florida or one of my favorite states, Texas, because, you know, I'm a Texas boy, you know, I love the state of Texas. It just seems that those states run so much better. And I hate to say, well, what a coincidence, they're Republican governors. But my God, look at New York and New Jersey. They're a disaster. Like Cuomo and Murphy seem to be tone deaf, Fred. And I think that's what pisses people off.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's really true. I mean, I don't know for a long time, there were very few cases in New York and New Jersey compared to other, when it was over the summer, there were very few cases in New York and New Jersey, and it was spiking elsewhere in the country, like in Florida and Texas. So, now, granted, things change, but I don't think that's universally true. And, you know, New York and New Jersey, especially New Jersey, I mean, these states are much more congested and much more crowded than Texas and Florida. That does make a difference. I mean, granted, Texas and Florida have more people, but New Jersey is much. No state is, even New York, if you look at New York State could be pretty wide open too, outside the city. But New Jersey is so congested, so that adds another problem in terms of trying to keep people separated from each other.
Well, listen, that's fair. And again, I think it's something that comes up in debate a lot. And I think it's something that at some point, whenever Governor Murphy has a Republican challenger, I'm sure after the summer, after the primary, that he'll have to answer for when it comes to how the state's being run. And let me ask you this, because I interviewed Jack Cittarelli last week on my studio show. And, you know, we had a good conversation for almost an hour. And it's interesting because Jack Cittarelli.
Yeah.
Yeah. I interviewed Jack Cittarelli. As a matter of fact, he'll be on the podcast next week live with me, but I had him on my studio show virtually live on a Monday night last week. And we talked obviously about the campaign, and he seems that he's going across the state, Fred, just asking people simply, hey, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And I get it, Fred, that aside from, you know, Democrats who, as you mentioned, there are more registered Democrats than Republicans in New Jersey. I think the majority of the electorate is registered independents, which we'll get to later to talk about. But I find it hard to believe that if you're being honest with yourself, Fred, economically, and listen, even before the pandemic, I find it hard to believe that anybody will honestly say, yeah, I am better off 4 years later under Phil Murphy. I find it really hard to grasp that, Fred. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But the question is, who do they blame? If you ask people, they may say, yeah, I really got screwed because of the pandemic. The question is, are they going to blame the pandemic, which is sort of something global, or are they going to blame Phil Murphy? I think that's a legitimate question. Obviously, maybe loyal Republicans will blame Phil Murphy, but I don't know if Democrats, you say independents, hold the key. They just may say, well, it's the pandemic that's really messing everything up. So it's not. I know, but that is a very, we know this. Ronald Reagan made that question famous a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's before you and I were born, right? But then
he asked that about Jimmy Carter. Yeah,
but I mean, so that's a very legitimate question to ask. But I don't know. I think it's not normal. I think it's the pandemic that is messing everything up. And I don't know if that's what people are going to say, yeah, I'm really bad. I'm not, I'm doing better, but it's, do they blame Phil Murphy or do they blame the pandemic? I think they may blame the pandemic. That's just my guess.
That's a fair question. That's a fair assessment. And let me ask you this, though, because, again, as I interviewed Jack Chury, and I'll send you the link if you want to watch it on your own time and you let me know what you think about it. But when I interviewed Jack, it was a good interview. I think, I asked him a lot of tough questions. I put his feet to the fire, certainly, and I think he held himself well. But, Fred, I'll make this sort of assessment. This is my outlook. I think that, what it's going to take to beat Phil Murphy in 2021, and irrespective of what we know now about him after 8 years, in the fall of 2009, that Chris Christie in 2009 was able to galvanize not just registered Republicans, but he was really able to galvanize independents who in 2017, a lot, I'm talking about millions of them stayed home. And I think we had something like a 37-38% turnout in Jersey.
The turnout was lousy. Yep.
Yeah. And again, hey, listen, to the victor go the spoils. Phil Murphy won. It was a low turnout. Fine. There's no asterisk to put on it. But again, the reality is a lot of Republicans stayed home because they were not happy with Kim Godano. A lot of independents stayed home because they were happy with Kim Godano. Chris Christie in 2009 galvanized just enough Republicans and independents when he beat, again, at the time, who was a disaster of a governor, John Corzine. I think he beat him by 4 points or something like that. It wasn't large. I think it was 4, maybe 5. Maybe I don't think it was that much, but it was 4 points the most. Do you think there's someone out there, maybe of a Chris Christie 2009-esque personality that could maybe take it to Phil Murphy? Because a lot of people talk to me, Fred, and say, I like Jack Chitarelli. He's a nice guy, but maybe he's too nice. Maybe he just can't take it to Phil Murphy. Are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, now here's the problem. You recall Chris Christie at that time, Chris Christie's had a lot of things that happened since.
Yeah.
He was kind of the guy wearing the white hat. Remember this? He was U.S. He was putting crooked politicians in jail. That got a lot of publicity, and rightly so. So that's when he ran for governor. That was his background. Nobody cared that he was a freeholder in Morris County. Most people didn't even know about that or care about that. But, he really had to use this word gravitas, which is, I don't even know what that means sometimes, but he seemed to have it. He was a guy who was had a following because of his, and Republicans don't really have someone like that now. And also, I think you said right. You said Corzine was a disaster. And he was a disaster, I think. But I don't know. I think objectively it would be tough to say Phil Murphy is a disaster the way John Corzine was. I don't know if you could make that argument to a group of partisan Republicans. But I don't know if you could make that argument to the entire state. So those are two major obstacles. And, yeah, you're right about Citarelli. But, I think that – tell me what you think. I think Bob Hugin would be a good candidate if he gets in the race. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I'll say this. I talked to Bob. I interviewed Bob back in 2018 when he was running for the U.S. Senate. And, again, Fred, my concern about someone like Bob Hugin is, yeah, he's got a lot of money. He can self-finance a campaign. I just don't know if Republicans will gravitate to him. Because what was interesting that in 2018, when he challenged Bob Menendez, and I know Bob personally, he's a former mayor here where I live in Union City. He's a friend of my family, knows my parents. I respect Bob personally because of our friendship. But it was interesting because I think that what Bob Hugin was trying to do in 2018 was say, well, you know, what has Bob Menendez been doing in the Senate? And I think for a lot of regular working class people, Fred, that resonated because Bob Menendez was doing things like, you know, passing bills concerning autism or trying to get, you know, tax breaks for working class people. And that just, you know what, for a lot of working class New Jerseyans, that's all it took for Bob Menendez to beat Bob Hugin solidly. And even when Doug Steinhardt stepped down from his chairmanship of the New Jersey Republican Party, I know Bob Hugin was trying to vie for the chairmanship. And even that,
and he lost.
And I think even that he fell flat. Now, again, it's a different parameter when it comes to voting for a state chair, you know, as committee people, whatever. I just don't – right now it's still early, but it's sort of a catch-22. It's early, but it's not early because it's mid-January, and at some point, you know, whoever wants to jump in the race needs to get in as soon as possible. And even that, that's a late start, Fred. Do you see it the same way?
Yes, I do. But you said, I mean, Bob Hugin could self-fund now. He spent, like, what, $30 million?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, granted, doesn't mean he wants to spend $30 million again. I mean, that's maybe tough to ask, but I think he has the money, and I think, let's face it, 2018 was not a good year for Republicans.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, all the congressional seats, Mikey Sherrill and Tom Malinowski and Andy Kim and, of course, even Jeff Van Drew, even though Jeff Van Drew changed parties, but that's not germane to this conversation. But, I mean, that was a very bad year for Republicans. My hunch is that 2021 could be a better year for Republicans simply because, hopefully, I'm saying hopefully from the Republican point of view, Donald Trump is history, and they can concentrate on Phil Murphy. And I think maybe a guy like Hugin who has the money to do it, I think he might – do you think average people know who Jack Cittarelli is?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. And I think it also –
They may know who Bob Hugin is. Do you tell me – what do you think about Cittarelli? Do they know who he is?
Well, listen, I think that's a fair point. I think that up and down the state, I think in different counties, while Jack is somewhat known, he's not widely known. And I think that's a problem because – and listen, Fred, this is the dynamic I think we're working with too, where, you know, Phil Murphy is looking to break a streak for Democrats because there hasn't been a Democrat reelected for governor since Brendan Byrne, way before you and I were born, okay? Way back then, okay? So
hey, I voted for Brendan Byrne.
Okay. But, you know, Republicans have had that sort of success in the state house where they've been able to have Republicans reelected. Now, again, are these Republicans that I'm proud of? No. Christy Whitman? Absolutely not. I think Chris Christie, when you look at a lot of Republicans now, there's that buyer's remorse about Chris, you know, but whatever. You're looking at other ones, you know, Tom Kaine, of course. So, you know, while history is not on Phil Murphy's side, he's still in a very good position to get reelected because I think of the Republican challenge. Well, there's only one right now because Doug Steinhardt dropped out. It seems that, you know, there just isn't, I think, an overwhelming presence within the Republican Party right now of someone. Again, no disrespect to Jack. I love Jack. He's a nice guy. He's a friend of mine. We talk off the air. He's a nice guy. I'm not saying this to vilify him, but it just seems that like there has to be a real super alpha male type character to take out Murphy. And right now there isn't one. Is that fair to say?
It is. Now, if Hugin, I don't know if Hugin is that character or not character, that individual, but if he gets committed to the race, he has the money to sort of make himself known or try to make himself known. I think that would be his advantage. And he may have a smidgen more name recognition because he did run statewide just a few years ago.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
And of course,
he's
from Union City, too, as you know.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. Now, Fred, let me ask you this because obviously not just the governor is running for reelection, but all 120 legislative seats are up for grabs, all 80 seats in the assembly, all 40 seats in the state Senate. And it's almost interesting, like where I live in Hudson County, we have the 31st, 32nd, 33rd. Those are all safe seats. I think it's fairly secure to make the assertion that state senators, Brian Stack, Nick Sacco, and Senator Cunningham are fine. They might maybe get a progressive ultra-liberal challenger to try to primary them, but they're fairly secure in their seats. I think all six assembly seats up here by me are safe. But I think there are some really vulnerable Democrats in a lot of the counties, Fred. And again, you know, Democrats only have a five-seat majority in the Senate. You know, if Republicans can kind of get on the horse a little bit and flip some seats because of the discontent with Murphy, I think, you know, Democrats could face some challenges later on this year. Or do you think the Democrats just have too much of a head start when it comes to legislative races?
You might be right about that. Keep in mind, there are only 40 Senate seats, so to win five is a lot.
Yeah.
To win five. And yeah, you're right about that. I mean, there are some competitive districts. I mean, I think in South Jersey, the woman who changed parties, like from Republican to Democrat, Dawn Adiego, that's her name, right?
Yep, that's right.
I mean, obviously, that's going to be a very competitive district. And I mean, all the districts in South Jersey are always competitive. So, there certainly could be some Republican pickups. And one thing is, I'm assuming for the sake of discussion that there's not going to be redistricting, correct? I don't think redistricting will be done in time for this coming election. So the districts are going to stay.
I doubt it. I doubt that redistricting is going to be a fundamental talking point this year, I think, because of obviously the pandemic and the census results. And I mean, who knows? They might just be bad, because I know up here in Hudson County, Fred, the census turnout was atrocious. I can't imagine in other counties how they were. So that's definitely something to keep an eye out for. Do you think that, you know, sort of the main state players, you know, we hear about State Senator Scutari, and we hear about how he's falling out of favor maybe in his district, or we're talking about Joe Cryan, who also, I think, facing a primary challenger. Maybe up in, maybe in Bergen and Morris counties or Passaic counties. Do you think Republicans have a better chance to make some gains in the Assembly or in the State Senate?
Well, before you go there, I mean, you got to think of there's going to be a big battle among Democrats replacing Loretta Weinberg in District 37. Up in Bergen County, that's going to be fun to watch. But that's a solidly Democratic district, so that's basically a primary show. I don't know. I mean, like here, I don't know about Republicans, but in this county where I live, 25 and 26, I mean, those districts have become much more competitive, and Democrats have been getting relatively close. So Republicans always have to protect their home territory, and that's what's happening here. And, you know, so much of this, again, depends on how Phil Murphy does. I mean, in 2017, it was kind of a landslide for Phil Murphy, and that's why, and if it's a landslide again, obviously the Democrats would do very good in the legislative race. But, I mean, all depends, you know. I think there's two variables. A, who the Republican candidate turns out to be, and B, just what, how is New Jersey coping with the pandemic in November? Well, who knows? I mean, 80% of the people could get the vaccine in the next 3 months, and maybe the pandemic's going to be history. That's going to be good for Phil Murphy, but you never know how things are going to unfold.
No, absolutely, and I think it's something definitely to watch. You know, Fred, when we think about 2021, we think about obviously not just only the gubernatorial race, we think about the legislative races, but you know, I've been beating the drums on this since last year. You know, it's going on about almost 70 days now that on November 3rd, New Jerseyans overwhelmingly, by a margin of 67% to 33%, told Trenton, hey, we want marijuana legalized for anyone over the use of, you know, for the age of 21. And it's 70 plus days later, and the legislature just seems to be sitting on their hands, Fred. I know they were working on something. I think there was a deal in the works. What do your sources tell you about why this hasn't gotten finalized? Because to me, it's personal, Fred, because, you know, before working in academia, I worked in the criminal justice system for 10 years. So I worked in jails. I worked in Kearney at the Hudson County Jail. I worked in Newark at the Essex County Jail. So, you know, for a year, it's personal for me seeing black and brown people and, you know, poor white people too, getting incarcerated for marijuana. It just seems like the legislature, 70 days later, after the ballot measure, is still sitting on their hands. And I think, quite frankly, I think it's disgraceful.
No, I agree with you. You know the history that the Democrats will run the legislature. they could have made marijuana legal 2 or 3 years ago, but they were afraid to do it.
Some
people said they just reacted. Maybe if that 20 people called the office, the post, or they were just afraid. They were afraid to take a stand. So putting it on the ballot was kind of the easy way out, or if you want to be snotty, the coward's way out. Okay, they did, and you're right. Now I think this. Now they're arguing. Actually, the debate now is something that seems legitimate, right? The debate is what are the penalties? I mean, legalization is only for 21 and over. So the question is, what are the penalties if you get caught using marijuana if you're underage, if you're 18, 19, 20 years old? I think that's a legitimate debate. I mean, I don't know. You probably don't want 17-year-old kids smoking marijuana, although there are a lot of people who are 17 years who remember being 17 years old and they probably smoked it, but that's just reality. From a policy of the state, you don't want people age 17 years old smoking pot and getting away with it. So, but you're right. I mean, that's a legitimate discussion, penalties for underage marijuana. But, yeah, you kind of think this discussion should have been held 3 months ago, and it should have got this straightened out. Absolutely.
No, I agree with you, and I think it's something that, you know, again, it's January. It's mid-January, and before you know it, Fred, then we'll start hearing, oh, well, it's budget season, and we're focused on the budget, right? We're going to, you know, I know last year because of the pandemic, the budget was delayed until late September. Will the governor? Will the governor and the legislature do that again because of COVID? Who knows? But I'm just concerned that this is going to fall by the wayside. And again, in the meantime, we're going to keep incarcerating people wrongfully. And for something that seemed like a slam dunk for Democrats, many of them, I think, especially, you know, listen, the very liberal ones, I'm not going to fault on this because they're the ones who are beating the drums. I think it's the moderate centrist Democrats that I think are really nervous about maybe turning off constituents. And again, you know, listen, I'll just give you an example. I think there is still a generational divide, Fred, when it comes to talking about marijuana. Listen, I talk to my dad every day, and my dad's a political junkie, and only now have I recently maybe just gotten my dad to maybe understand the importance of, let's say, CBDs or medicinal marijuana. Mm-hmm. And mind you, I don't smoke it. I never have. I don't care. I never will. But the idea that we need to sort of maybe evolve in our thinking, I think that's a struggle for a lot of Democrats, I think, and their constituents, Fred.
I think you're right. But then again, it should not be any longer because, as you mentioned, look at the vote. Look in the vote in November. Look at the overwhelming support. So why should you be nervous if 65-70% of the people agree with you statewide? I realize it may be different depending on your legislative district, but still, the public is definitely on the side of legalizing marijuana. So I don't know why. Keep in mind, if you're a Democrat, if you're elected Democrat, you're basically coming from a district that leans Democratic. So why would you still be uneasy? I don't get it.
I agree with you.
No Democrat is going to be challenged in the primary from the right saying, I'm running against you because you support legalizing marijuana. That's never going to happen. So it's just craziness, really. It's silliness.
I agree with you, and I think it's something to definitely keep an eye out for. Fred, you know, as I was browsing Insider NJ, and today I saw an article. Yesterday I saw a great column from our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, you know, really detailing the feisty fighter from Teaneck, and you brought up State Senator Loretta Weinberg. You know, in your years of covering Jersey politics, you know, what stands out for you about Loretta Weinberg?
Well, she had chutzpah. Most people know what chutzpah means, right? I mean, she had guts. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to be used in vernacular, quote-unquote, balls. I mean, she challenged authority when it had to be challenged. Now, granted, I mean, she's in leadership now, and she's the majority leader. But remember, she wasn't always in leadership, and she always stuck up for her constituents. I mean, remember the time when she so annoyed Chris Christie? Chris Christie wanted to take a bat to her. Remember that?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that that shows feistiness. I mean, Chris wanted to beat up, granted, he was being facetious, but he actually wanted the press to take a bat to her. I mean, the issue, yeah. So, I mean, that sets it up. Have had a lot of guts, and that's what you want in a state legislature.
Now, it seems that in that district, District 37, with her impending retirement, it would seem that I believe Assemblywoman, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, Valerie Venere Huddle seems to be in the driver's seat for that seat. Are you hearing those same things in your sources, or do you hear other names throwing themselves?
Yeah, I think so. You may know. As a Hudson, you know, I think her family comes from North Bergen, right? I think they do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Anthony Venere, he owns a funeral home. Seems like in Hudson County, a lot of people own funeral homes going to politics. You might have noticed.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. <That's right.
laughs> Even like Dick Cody. I mean, you get to see a lot of people. Yeah. But anyway, she probably does have the advantage. The other guy, I mean, it's Gordon Johnson, right? Yeah, he has. So it's going to be an interesting battle.
Well, without question, I mean, that's a part of Bergen County that predominantly is, you know, very, very Democratic.
Teaneck and Englewood, places like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't want to say they're super progressives, but they're the prototypical working-class Democrat type of population there, I think. And certainly, you know, you've seen Huddle become sort of a staple in that district along with Weinberg for so long. This was quite the surprise to see Loretta Weinberg stepping down this year. Are you hearing about anybody else, any of the other, you know, veterans or, you know, the lifers in the legislature? Are you hearing any of the whispers of anybody else maybe stepping down this year?
No, not that I know of. Well, how old is Loretta, 84, 85?
Approximately, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, if she was... So another 4 years, he'd be pushing 90. So one would, I guess it's legitimate why she decided to step down. But you know, a lot of people don't step down. You got to literally drag them out of there. So that's just the way it is.
No, absolutely. And I think, Fred, also looking at the fact that with her stepping down, it would seem, and again, this is according to the logistics I'm reading, it would seem that State Senator Ruiz would then now become the Senate Majority Leader.
That's certainly a big deal, yeah.
Yeah, what are you hearing about how she's viewed in the Democratic caucus in Trenton? I know she's very popular among progressives. I mean, I've met Senator Ruiz. She's a nice woman. I don't like any of her politics, but that's because I'm a center-right guy. But how is she viewed within the Democratic Party in Trenton?
No, I think what you kind of just said it. I think she's viewed very favorably because of her liberal. I like the word liberal better than progressive. I'm an old-fashioned guy because of her liberal credentials. And, that's why it's probably why her name has popped up as sort of ascending to the majority. But still, the Democrats keep control of the Senate.
Absolutely.
You
of
mentioned
course.
Before you.
It seems like a foregone conclusion. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, five seats is a lot of seats to try to overcome. And, you know, again, you know, in 2019, you know, Republicans were able to do, you know, chip away at one seat with Mike Testa. He'll be up for grabs again. I just interviewed Anthony Bucco on my Real Talk show recently. And I'll tell you, Senator Bucco, I think, is from your neck of the woods. How do you see his chances later this year?
Well, I mean, Tony, obviously I've known both Bucos, the fella and his father who passed away. I've known them a long time. Yeah, I've always liked them and got along with them. Now, his chances are, look, I said the district is more competitive, but there's still more Republicans here than Democrats. And I think that always gives Tony the advantage. That's going to give Tony Bucco Jr., and he's not really a junior, that's going to give him an advantage. But there's one thing you mentioned about legislators. What do you hear about Tom Kane Jr.? I've heard some rumblings that he may not run again or just may just concentrate on going for Congress again, unless you have more better information than I do. What do you hear about that?
You know what, Fred? Currently, right now, people are telling me he's going to run again for his state Senate seat. Again, my sources could be wrong any day of the week. Who knows? But that's what I'm hearing. you know, and listen, and I've met Junior on a few occasions, and he's a nice gentleman. He is well-spoken. I was really surprised. I thought of all the House races that Republicans had a chance to flip, I thought Tom Kaine Jr. was going to take out Malinowski. And I was really surprised. I thought that even with everything going on in New Jersey, I thought that of all the Republicans, I thought Kaine had the best chance to beat Tom Malinowski. And I thought he was going to do it. And I think that, this narrow defeat, I don't know if it's going to embolden him to run again. I mean, listen, I like Junior, but, you know, Fred, you know, he's already lost the U.S. Senate race to Bob Menendez. He lost the congressional race. I get it. You know, he keeps winning in his legislative district, but at some point, I don't know if he, I don't know if he'll just be happy running in that, you know, in his district. I don't know if he'll want to have bigger ambitions because, you know, two federal losses, I mean, that's big, man, you know, for an ego, for a guy. And again, I'm not saying that Tom Jr. has a huge ego, but any that has to chip away at somebody at some point. When you lose two races the way he lost, I think it has to demoralize you. I can't see Tom Kaine Jr. running again for Congress. I could be wrong, but that's how I see it. How do you?
Well, I don't know. You're right what you said. I know. I thought he had the best chance. So you think of the other districts that the Dems went rather easily. Andy Kim in Central Jersey, I guess, and Mikey Sherrill up here in Morris County. But, you know, I mean, it got – you know what happened. I mean, since the mail-in ballots were counted first on election night, Malinowski had like a lead of 27,000 votes. I thought for a while Kaine was going to win because you saw like the margin kept on getting closer and closer. And in the end, he only lost by like less than 5,000. So, I mean, in a way, it was so close. I mean, I think that district is always close. I mean, I think Leonard Lance lost by 6,000 votes. So he lost by less than 5,000. So that it prompt someone to run again because, again, you don't know what's going to happen, but you would think that 2022 might be a good year for Republicans because everybody, you know, people say that all the time, that the party of the president generally loses seats in a congressional election. Yeah. Now, maybe that doesn't have to happen, but, I mean, you would think, I mean, so I don't know. You're right. He could always be – nothing prevents him from getting elected to the Senate and running for Congress.
Well, I'll say this, Fred, and again, as a student of history and as a history teacher by day, you know, 2022, and you're correct, 2022 seems to be that it will be a good year for Republicans because, you know, historically, other than 1932 and 2002, those are the only years that during midterm election seasons that the incumbent party hasn't lost. And it tends to be historically where the opposing party tends to take over the House of Representatives. So, you know, November 3rd, obviously Republicans chipped away at the Democratic majority in the House. It's not as large as it was, as it once was. Certainly in 2022, again, history is telling you that, you know, there's a good chance. Republicans are smart. They run good candidates. There's a good chance, and I pray to God, that hopefully Nancy Pelosi will no longer be Speaker in 2023 when we start. But again, first things first, we have to sort of get through 2021 and get through 2022. Fred, a couple other races here in New Jersey wanted to pick your brain about. I know it was announced in District 26, Democrat Christine Clark announced her candidacy. She's hoping to win the primary there in that district. And obviously her goal is to unseat Joe Panaccio. And that might be a tall order, especially in those areas of Essex and Morris and Passaic counties. How do you see that? I mean, it's still early, but how do you see Joe Panaccio in 2021?
Well, I would see him winning. I think that the two legislative districts here, 25 is much more competitive. I think the registration gap is like down to 4,000 or 5,000 Dems Republicans. Republicans have the advantage. In 26, the Republicans' registration lead is still fairly comfortable. I think it's over 10,000. So it's tough for a Democrat to really, it's going to be tough for a Democrat to really win. So I have to think Panaccio will survive. But I think that Republicans might have a primary in that district. There's a fellow named Christian Barranco, who actually says he wants to run for the assembly. Now, the two the two incumbent assembly people are Betty Lou DeCrosse and Jay Weber. So I don't know which one he's going to be targeting. So that remains to be seen.
Interesting, for sure. Fred, any, not spoilers per se, but any big columns you're working on, or what should we keep an eye out for when it comes to you now early here in 2021?
Oh, I don't know. I just follow the news every day. I mean, there's nothing really immediate on the horizon.
Well, let me ask you this, because...
There's nothing. No immediate that's really on the horizon. No immediate breaking issue that I know I'm going to be writing about next week. We'll just see how things develop.
Okay, fair enough. I wanted to ask you about this because I did see... today, again, on Insider NJ, and certainly, folks, you know, check out Insider NJ every day because it's the best news source here in the Garden State by far. I did see an article today, Fred, I don't know if you caught it on Insider's homepage, but apparently a bill aimed at curtailing law enforcement from political abuse passed committee today. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that today. Apparently all the members of the committee voted yes in the bill, and it was sponsored by State Senator Richard Cody out of the 27th Legislative District. You know, anything you can tell our listeners today about why this is significant as a bill?
Well, I mean, I guess it's significant because basically this is like, if you're a police chief and you're running for mayor, you can't campaign for mayor while you're also running the police department. Is that what it means, basically?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty much it prohibits certain public officials from campaigning for elections to public office during the term of their public service and for a period of 3 years afterwards. So it seems that according to the bill, it would apply to the attorney general, the first assistant attorney general, and then all county prosecutors, assistant prosecutors, and legal assistants to prosecutors. I think that's a good deal. I think that's a good idea, though, Fred. I think in the hindsight, you know, if you don't pass a bill like this, it could be ripe for abuse in any county. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, definitely can, but, you know, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. You get a little apprehensive. I mean, you say this bill passed unanimously out of committee.
I believe it did pass committee today. It passed committee today. Again, I don't know if it's going to come to a vote at some point this week.
Do you get apprehensive sometimes that when state legislatures make it more difficult for other people to run?
No, I do. I'm always
that's a thought popped to mind too. So.
It's a little scary about that. It's a little scary. I also noticed, too, Fred, I wasn't sure if you caught it, but State Senator Michael Daugherty, very emphatic Republican. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have him on my Real Talk show at the end of the month on Monday, not the last Monday of January. So I'll definitely send you that link if you're interested in watching it that day, but I'll have him on live. You know, he was on with Steve Adubato this week on his show, and, you know, it seems that Mike Daugherty is still adamant about election integrity and the issues in New Jersey. I know we started the program talking about that. Do you think this is something that could come back to haunt State Senator Daugherty as he's running for re-election this year? Or do you think this is just a mission that he wants to, you know, take on the harness and say, hey, I'm a crusader. I'm going to lead the charge on this.
Well, probably right about him being a crusader and leading the charge, but, you know, his district is probably one of the most Republican districts in the state, right? I don't see how that could hurt him politically. I mean, that's just to refresh people's memory. That's a district that Hackettstown and Warren County, and it's and I don't think that's not a district that's competitive. So I don't think I don't think anyone's going to challenge him in the primary running from the left. So I don't think that'd be any problem. I mean, yeah, I think it probably is a crusade.
Well,
yeah, sometimes crusades are good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And listen, it's something we'll keep an eye on here in the weeks and months ahead. Fred, before I let you go, you've been a gentleman today to come on with me. I know you're very busy. Before I let you go, I had to pick your brain because we don't know what's going to happen coming up now, spring training's a few weeks away. As a devoted Yankee fan, I got to tell you, man, your New York Mets, wow, they're making some moves here. You got to be happy, bro.
Yes, indeed. I got Francisco Lindor. They got a very good shortstop. They gave up two good young players, but they also got a pitcher too, and they need pitching. So yeah, that looks pretty good. That's going to be a very good trade. The Mets should be interesting this year. Of course, I'm just hoping I'll be able to go to baseball games. I'm sure you're hoping to go to spring training too. So I'm hoping to be able to do that.
Well, I agree with you. And it was interesting because obviously right before the start of the playoffs, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo did indicate that, you know, in Buffalo, New York,
yep.
there will be a certain percentage of people allowed for the playoff game. It's certainly that again this Saturday night as the Buffalo Bills play the Baltimore Ravens, there will be a certain amount of people again allowed in Buffalo for the home playoff game. You know, I really hope that, again, we're still months away. We still don't know what Major League Baseball has decided on in terms of a season, in terms of a number of games, in terms of what the protocols are going to be. But, you know, I'm skeptical about whether or not Governor Cuomo or even Governor Murphy here, especially in Trenton, since Trenton now is the official AAA affiliate to the Yankees, you know, whether or not they're going to allow any sort of outdoor seating for these sort of athletic competitions. Because, you know, again, Fred, you know, I talked about this before, you know, when we talk about voting and we talk about in-person activities, like, you know, you can kind of make the case that, you know, Governor Murphy probably could have allowed a small percentage of MetLife for people to attend Giants and Jet games, you know? And again, we saw it in Florida, we saw it in Texas, right? Like in Texas, we saw 50% capacity at Cowboy Stadium for my Cowboys, and we saw games in Florida for different Florida teams. You know, I was really hoping Governor Murphy would have allowed at least 25% of the building. That wasn't the case. Are you hearing anything about whether or not the governor is going to even bend on that in 2021 when it comes to, you know, soccer games for Major League Soccer or anything like that?
The soccer season starts around baseball time, right? April and May, around March and April?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Yeah. So we'll see. But hopefully, also two things. Hopefully, we'll be able to have people for football games next September. I mean, you would hope that's the case. But yeah, you know, from what I gather, I haven't heard of any problems with you about the attendance of fans up in Buffalo. I mean, like problems with fans like not wearing masks or sitting too close together. So I mean, hopefully that was a good experience, and I'll see you again this week. And maybe that could convince the governor to allow fans at baseball games too. But then again, you don't know what's going to happen in the city. I don't know if that's the governor's call. I guess it would be. Yeah, because the governor still could superstite de Blasio, but you don't know what his feelings are on the subject. So, but I think most baseball fans agree they'd like the chance to be able to go to ball games.
Fred, I agree with you. Baseball is still my favorite pastime. I love going to ball games with my dad. We are devoted Yankee fans in my family. And believe me, not going to ball games last year was disappointing. It's something I love doing for Father's Day with him. You know, I'm praying that we can go back and at least watch some baseball. Also reasonably priced. I mean, the last thing we need is the Yankees and Mets charging, you know, almost the cost of donating a kidney to go to a ball game now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the last thing we need
yeah.
as well, brother. So, but
yep.
Fred, listen, stay safe and healthy. You are, again, a testament to journalism, bro. I love your columns. You're an exceptional writer.
Thank you.
I really, part of, I think, what I try to do as a journalist, Fred, and we do different things, you and I, but I think part of the reason I work so hard in my own form of journalism is because, you know, I want to ask those tough questions. I want to continue being fair and being, you know, thought provoking. And, you know, you motivate me to be a better journalist, Fred. So I just
thank you so much. I do my best.
Well, I thank you again, Fred. And thanks for joining us here today on Political Direct. And we'll talk to you again soon here on InsiderNJ.com.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night. Good day.
Take care, Fred. Have a good day.
Bye.
All right, folks. Great episode there again with Fred Snowflake, one of our great columnists at Insider NJ. And certainly, ladies and gentlemen, you can't say enough about his work and what a great job he does on a daily basis with his contributions to Insider NJ, and certainly, you know, when we think about his contributions and how well thought out his, you know, his columns are and what he brings to the table, you know, he's such an asset to Insider NJ. And I know that, you know, the hierarchy believes that too. I don't think I have to speak for them. But again, if you haven't checked out his columns, folks, you know, go to InsiderNJ.com and just look up Fred Snowflack, and you won't be disappointed. You know, I may not always like what he writes, as I'm sure like everybody else. You know, I'm, you know, when I read Alan Steinberg, for example, he pisses me off. When I read, you know, Max Pizarro, the editor-in-chief, sometimes he pisses me off. When I read Jay Lasseter, he incredibly pisses me off. What they all have in common is that they're incredible writers, they're thought-provoking, and more importantly, you know, they're genuine and they're transparent, and they're going to write what they feel, and they feel what they write. And, you know, I think it's something to really, you know, hold your head up and applaud them for what they do for journalism, respectively in their own brands here in the state of New Jersey. So definitely keep an eye out for Fred Snowflack. He's going to keep rocking and rolling here in 2021. Well, that's our show for this week, folks. And certainly if you missed any part of the broadcast, and you can listen to today's episode in its entirety as well as other episodes, by going to www.insiderng.com/podcasts. That's plural, podcasts. And you can download them and listen to them from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you have to say, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Hey, check it out. Write to me, and I do answer you promptly. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. And you can also follow me directly at Professor Fernando Uribe. So I know a lot of you enjoy my Instagram stories. Do tune in. I appreciate you liking everything on there and certainly sharing my content on social media. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, folks, over 1,000 likes and counting. And certainly, as a reminder, check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene. We got great columns, great writers. Again, it starts at the top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, working its way down to my excellent teammates, Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes drives me nuts. But they're all great writers in their own right. So I'm proud to be part of the Insider NJ team. Once you go on the website, upper right-hand corner, click on the subscribe button. You'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing, available in your inbox every morning. Check it out, folks. Again, the best coverage of the political scene. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ via www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, I appreciate you tuning in here. Special programming note coming up next Thursday, live January the 21st at 9 p.m., we will have Republican nominee for governor Jack Cittarelli on the show live again next Thursday night, January the 21st. He'll be on with me at approximately 9:10 p.m., so you definitely want to tune in for that. I know he'll have a lot to say. If you tuned into my Real Talk with Fernando Uribe episode via Eisen and Jay last Monday, Jack Cittarelli was on there, and folks, the episode was amazing, well over 4,500 likes and counting on that episode alone. So you'll definitely want to hear what Jack has to say live next week. So definitely tune in for that. And certainly, folks, you know, as a reminder, you can check out all the episodes for Politically Direct at www.insidernj.com/podcast. And whether it's on your morning commute, whether you're just getting your workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, whatever it is, take a break, tune in, and trust me, you'll be happy that you did. And always remember, folks, it's real, it's here, it's politically direct. Good night, Randolph, New Jersey, all my good people up there in Morris County, everyone listening up there in Randolph, thank you for supporting the podcast. I'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, keep on talking.